So welcome to The Pulse. We're excited to be back again, and I feel like I say it every week, and it's been true, which is kind of a blessing, that we have exciting, informative, inspiring individuals who are doing a bunch of different things in a bunch of different fields. And we have another one of those people who I don't know if we call her actor, that check, best-selling author, check, singer, performer, check. Chrissy Metz joins us. How are you today?
Well, hi, I'm well. Thank you for that really sweet introduction.
You're shaking your head at me. Oh, that's true.
It's true, but I think I'm shaking my head because I'm like, oh, I did those things? I'm doing those things? Wow. Yeah.
That's good. And that's why it's so inspiring for people. But thank you for doing this. I appreciate you taking the time.
My pleasure.
So on The Pulse, we start with everyone, because the people we talk to do and have done so many different things that we like to know how people define themselves. So when you, I don't know, do we do elevator speeches on ourselves? How do you define yourself?
Wow. I am a middle child of five who grew up in Japan, doesn't speak Japanese, loves music, entertaining, and people. And gratefully, I've been able to make a career out of it. So,
okay. Happy?
Am I happy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for the most part, yeah.
Okay. And I ask you that because before we started the recording, you and I were talking, and I do research for everybody that we talk to. And you've got some stories. Like you've been through some things getting to this day. So let's start with kind of going back a little bit with, you know, how childhood directed you into acting, if it did. Like, how did that help you evolve as you faced some challenges?
Well, it's interesting. I was the youngest child that my mom remarried and had my two younger sisters. And I was always sort of the entertaining diplomat. Like, I could always see both sides of everything. I'm also a Libra, and yes, I love astrology. And so I'm always, you know, I don't want anybody to feel bad, and I want to, you know, make them happy. But then I found myself sort of looking outward to find validation through other people of their happiness, and if that would make me happy. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's not always the case, you know. And, you know, it took me many, many years to understand that I have to come first, as opposed to always trying to make everybody else happy and being a people pleaser. And I think that ultimately that's helped me with my acting, because I have a sense of empathy and a desire to want to please people, but also in my adulthood I've understood boundaries. But I don't know that those experiences ever sort of painted the picture of me being an actor ever. Okay. Music was my first love, and it was something that I grew up with and around, and it was sort of pushed to the wayside. And my manager, who I met in Florida at an open call my sister took me to, I wasn't even there to audition myself, she sort of didn't encourage the music side. And she was like, you're really funny, you should do acting. And I was like, great, what does that mean? I was like, in high school, I mean, music became really my living love when I was in middle school, because my mom couldn't afford a band instrument. And all the cool kids were in band. And I was like, yeah, I'm not playing the baritone. That's the only instrument left. And my mom can't rent it anyway, so I joined the choir. But I was just so afraid of my own shadow. And I had a tumultuous childhood with, you know, with my stepfather. And now I understand him, and I've forgiven him for the things that I was sort of put through, but it was really difficult. So All of these things, I think, are the perfect storm to be an actor, but I never thought that that was going to be the case until we got prepared to do an open call, and I found an agent in LA, and I was like, oh, I really like telling stories, and I really like relating to people and understanding myself through these characters. And then I got an agent, moved to LA, and I was like, oh, my life
here
is starting. Look at me, little girl, just from a small town, just trying to live her dreams. And then my manager said that my agent needed an assistant. Yeah. And I was like, that's great for her. That's so great. And I was like, oh, you want me to do it? I was like, what if she gets to know me and hates me and drops me as a client, and then I have to move back to Florida? Like, that's what?
But you and were, so, I want to jump in for a second for a couple reasons.
Yes.
One, I don't know that anybody has said all the cool kids were in band, so I want to go join
band. In my school, they were.
All the cool kids were in band.
All the cool kids. All the cool, rich, beautiful kids were in band.
All right, look, I can't hate because the success speaks for the journey. So, okay, but I hadn't heard that before. But in talking about, and I read about you working with your agent mm-hmm. assistant or what have you. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that, because you got gigs or a couple, like you started to work. So it's one of those things where on the outside, you seemed like you were walking the path to success, but still working as the assistant of your agent.
Yeah. So I became her assistant, and I'm always rooting for the underdog. And when we get mail-in submissions, I'm like, we should open up all of them and we should help all the people who need to be helped. And I realized, like, I was just a girl from a small town who wanted somebody to believe in them. So I would do that. And she's like, you're really good at this and people really like you. And I'm like, yeah, but that's not what I want to do. Like, I want to act. And she's like, no, I know, but like, you can go on auditions when you have them and then work for me. And I was like, okay. But I got maybe a handful of auditions once a year. Okay. And most people were getting 5-10 auditions, sometimes a day, sometimes a week. And so it was really hard. I always joke and say it was like watching your boyfriend take another woman out every day, but like to your favorite restaurant, at your favorite table, having your favorite dessert. And I was like, this is hard. Like, I'm grateful for the experience and I'm happy for those people, but like, I want to be doing that. And so Devon Franklin, who produced the movie Breakthrough I starred in a couple of years ago, this always rings true now, especially on, you know, in hindsight, but he said, you have to learn to carry a crown before you can wear one. And I was like, oh, that's what I was doing. I was learning how it was all supposed to go and learning how to talk to people and, you know, just sort of navigate the world, but behind a desk.
Yeah. Life always looks better looking back, doesn't it? You can look back at the journey and say, that's what that was preparing me for. I wish I knew it while I was going through it.
I know, because in the moment you're like, what is this actual hell I'm living in? This is crazy. So, and you know, I was broke and living paycheck to paycheck. And I mean, obviously a lot of people are in this country and it's so unfortunate. And I'm fortunate enough to like have pursued something that became a success, which I never thought would happen. But when I did book This Is Us, even I had to borrow money to go to the audition. I didn't even have enough money for gas. You know, like you have to have $20 at least minimum on your credit card or your debit card for them to process. I had 81 cents in my bank account. So I had nothing.
So that's true. I read that story. So legitimately you had 81 cents and not enough money for gas before you go book a role that end up being life changing and one of the largest roles ever. That was real.
Yes. Oh, it's so real.
I also read a panic attack story where you kind of looked back at this isn't what I want my life to be. Like, tell us about that.
Yeah. So I was married to an angel of a human being. We're still friends. But ultimately, we understood in hindsight, of course, that we just weren't destined to be together, at least not forever. We were just very different people. And I also was, you know, still working as an agent and just very unfulfilled and unhappy. And my body was keeping the score. And so when I'm sitting in this movie theater and this panic attack arises, I'm like, oh, this is it. I'm going to die watching The Expendables. This is how I'm going to go. And I was like, this is not cool. So, of course, an ambulance came, put me on a stretcher. And they were like, did a full workup and they're like, you're fine, you're healthy, but I think you might have anxiety. And I'm like, what's anxiety? What in the world? Yeah. And so it really caused me to just take a pause and understand that like there was something that my body was trying to tell me. And it was that I was just so unhappy and doing things for everybody else. And I was too afraid to sort of pursue that. And so I think that I was blaming my ex-husband, like, oh, well, I need to work full time because he's a part-time writer and I want to help him with his stuff. And ultimately I was like, if nothing changes, nothing changes. Mm-hmm. So I went down this journey of, you know, self-help and journaling and therapy and life coach and just tried to figure out what was going on. And I realized I wanted to act and I wanted to pursue telling stories and music. And so I...
Panic attack in the movie theater drove you into TV and movies.
Well, I mean, yes.
Kind of.
It made me realize that I was unhappy and I needed to figure out what was going to make me happy.
Yeah.
So
This Is Us, which we can talk about, a tremendous success, mm-hmm. like not on our network, but it's over now, so whatever. tremendous success. Congratulations to you. That was amazing.
Yeah.
But it was also seemingly, again, as I read your story and you know, now that we're friends for a really long time,
right.
I hear about your story. And it almost sounds like there were parallels. Like you, the character in some ways was you. You in some ways were the character. You seemingly very open sharing these types of stories about what you went through. Like character aside, yeah. Why? Why are you so comfortable putting all that out there?
You know, it's funny. Sometimes I question that myself. Because I see some actors who are just so insular and like protective. And there has to be a certain degree that you do that because as big as people big you up, they also want to watch you fall. Mm. And so unfortunately, it doesn't matter what I say or do, somebody's going to have something to say about it. But for me, I realized that my catharsis was like sharing what was going on and then having people turn around and say, oh my gosh, I went through that same thing. I had that relationship with my father or a lack of a relationship with my father, or I had a panic attack in a movie theater. Like the more specific I would get with my story, I would be relating to other people and they would relate to me. And I was like, oh, this is, maybe I can help people. It's not about like my ego. It's literally about how do I get through it? What did you do? Oh, and you did this? Oh, okay. This is how we get through the hard times in our lives. And also, I mean, there's of course things that I keep to myself.
Yeah.
But generally I'm just a person who feels like if I've gone through it, I can be courageous enough to help other people to understand they're not alone either. Mm-hmm. And then it helps me. So, yeah, I think I've always been that way. And I've always been a very vulnerable person.
But you don't see a lot of that on TV. Like you certainly don't see a lot of that you see a lot of that character on TV. You don't see a lot of people who work in that field and in that industry who are willing to do that. Do you think that that's part of the reason why everything I read about you is like, she's so relatable and people love her. And it's kind of, you know, turned into this role model for all types of people. You think that's why, or one of the reasons like people related to you so much?
Yeah. I think they're like, oh, that's my friend. I know her. I am her. Or I know someone like her. And she makes me feel like I'm less alone. And also, whether it's somebody who's not a straight size and, you know, as a plus size woman, it's like, we don't really see those characters on network television. And we surely didn't for a very long time. And now, of course, the tide is changing, thank goodness. But I think they were like, oh, if she can do it, can't I do it? And so I think that it was inspiring to see that journey and for me to be open and honest about it, because it wasn't easy. Yeah. And it wasn't what my ego wanted. It, you know, 12 years in the making and me almost moving back home to Florida to teach preschool again, it was like, no, there's not a timeline necessarily, and you should do what your heart tells you you should do. So I think in every regard, people were like, oh, she is me and I am her and I can do this too.
Is that extra pressure on you? And you talked about being a plus size woman in Hollywood, mm-hmm. you know, and I've read about the kind of the struggles that so many people go through. You know, you lost 50 pounds, 100 pounds, and then gained some of it back and then lost, you know, and mm-hmm. kind of going back and forth. But you, unlike a lot of other people, did it very publicly. Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing is, when you're an actor, you're sort of living privately, publicly. Like that's what you do through roles, and it is what it is. But I don't identify with my body. Like it's not all that I am. It's just our vehicle. You know, if we only identified with what car we drove, I think a lot of us would be in trouble. because it doesn't really matter. You know, like, I think it's important, like, what you put in your car and how you maintain it and all those things are very important. But I think as our bodies, of course, as we age, we change. We don't know, like, I didn't know what panic and anxiety was, you know, when I had that panic attack. And I don't know necessarily what foods are good for me or not, or what my behaviors around food were when, you know, I was a kid, and why I would numb out with food. Like, all of these things sort of take effect, and you go through them when it's the right time. And so when you know better, you do better. And I think we're all just trying to figure out this thing called life, which is like life on life's terms. And sometimes we have great days, great months, great seasons, and great years. And sometimes we're not well, you know, like, I went through a really hard time. My first Emmy nomination, I was so excited. And it was one of the most wonderful times of my life. But my mom had a severe stroke that she almost passed away from. Like, people don't realize everything that's going on in someone's life at any given moment. And for me, food is something that was always comforting and that I could reach to sort of make myself feel better. And it wasn't until I became an adult that I realized, like, oh, it makes me feel worse if I'm eating over something and eating my feelings, you know. So, but it's a process and it's not linear. Healing is never linear. So again, doing it publicly is like, whether it's intentional or not, it's like, I hope people are understanding that they're not alone, and I don't have it figured out.
Yeah. We're all figuring this out together. Right. Yeah. And that it's at, you know, at the risk of sounding pretentious or condescending, I see why people say that you're their friend as soon as they start talking to you. You really are that relatable, sharing stories, kind of easy to talk to. And it comes across like you really are like, yeah, I'm on this hit show and I have all these Emmy nominees and Golden Globe, all this kind of stuff, but I'm here for you.
Yeah. I mean, none of that stuff really matters. Like, it's wonderful in this present time because it provides opportunities. But like, if I attach to the good of what people say, I have to attach to the bad. And I just try to stay neutral. And so it's really nice when someone says nice things, but they say a lot of awful things. And I'm like, yo, you don't even know me. You can say what you want. And I know it's just their projection, you know, and how they feel about themselves. Because I really do think that, like, if you loved yourself, you couldn't be mean and hateful to other people, because it's just like not possible. And so I just try not to attach to any of those things. While they're very nice, yeah, it's really like, how do I feel about myself? And so when somebody does say something and it stings, I'm like, oh, it stings because I think it's true. And it's something that I'm dealing with that I haven't really gotten over. So, you know, being recognized is lovely, especially when it comes to, you know, awards and nominations. But it can't be everything. It just, yeah, it can't.
I feel like we jumped in. We went deep.
Oh, yeah.
We went through different issues. We did all these things. Yeah. That particular show just recently ended. A very successful, 6-season, you know, run with good people. Did you know it was going to be a hit like that? Did anybody know it was going to have that type of impact on people's lives?
I think when we went to the table read and we all read in front of all the executives who have read numerous you know, versions of the script and still cried and got emotional. Mm-hmm. We all sat around the table like, wow, this is really special. And everybody at this table is really special. But I don't think we knew it was going to be the success that it was, because you just don't know. I mean, you hope that the pilot goes and you hope people latch on, and you hope the writing stays special and true. And it did, of course. And Dan Fogelman is a genius, but there's no way in the world anybody could have predicted that. I certainly didn't. Yeah.
That success, a couple movies continuing, I'm sure. But you said when we started talking earlier that music was your first love. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you kind of fell into a hit show and doing all of these things.
I did not fall, but okay. It seems like that. It seems that way.
But now, and you never really stopped exploring music, but now you're getting a chance to kind of go deeper into that first love. Is that because you're touring now also?
Yeah, I have a 7-city winery tour coming up at the beginning of August, which I'm very excited about. But music was my first love, and not really encouraged, as I said, with my first manager. And it was really kind of like, wow, what is that supposed to mean? Like, does she not believe in me? And so it took a backseat. And then, you know, when you're trying to be creative and just trying to dabble and trying to find your sound and what makes you happy, you know, I did try to do all that, but it was through playing Kate on This Is Us and having her sort of live in the shadow of her mom, who was an aspiring singer, that I realized, yeah, I really want to do music and I really love it. And I was lucky enough to be in the movie Breakthrough that Devon Franklin produced. Mm-hmm. And he actually pitched me to sing the title song, I'm Standing With You. And Diane Warren, who is, you know, an Oscar song darling, I think she's been nominated 13 times at this point. She was like, I don't think Chrissy, is she another actress who thinks that she can sing? And I was like, oh, D-dub, dang, okay.
Yeah.
And so I ended up singing the song and she was like, oh, you can sing. And then of course it ended up being Oscar nominated. I sang at the Oscars. And then I ended up getting a really awesome deal with a label, Universal Music Group, Nashville here. And so I was like, okay, all right. Like, things are in the music world, you know, opening up for me. And I think so much was a catalyst was being Kate on the show, because I was able to just like realize how much I wanted it.
Yeah.
And it was still there.
Yeah. So I had the same response, by the way, like, you actually can sing. Oh. So, and I, you know, because I'm so good at judging that level of sound, but there are a lot of people who, like, Shaq's first love was rap, and, you know, so what? Like, you actually can sing. So does it feel good to get the chance to go out there and do, because there are, I feel like there's a lot of people, I feel like every professional athlete wants to be, has a dog.
My dog Mabel.
Oh, she's, yeah.
Clearly, there's an Amazon or something package at the door. I'm so sorry, everybody.
It's all right. We're not live.
We have an editor. That's why we have an editor.
And you met the editor before. That's what that person is for.
That's right.
I feel like we're gonna let Mabel bark it out.
Yeah, Mabel. Hold on one second.
So we play a little music underneath it. We go doom doom doom. While we're waiting on Mabel to bark it out. Celebrities, they are just like us.
You're darn right. We are just like
us. That was the celebrities are just like us moment.
Yes.
Like, all of us have had that moment. But I feel like every professional athlete is an aspiring rapper. Every rapper thinks that they can play basketball. Most actors think they can sing. Like, I feel like there's this whole routine. So it's got to feel good that you actually can, and you're kind of getting a chance to go out there and explore that side of it now, and touring and being received very well.
Yeah. You know, I think it's really important, whether you think or people think you're good at something or not, to try, because you don't know unless you try. And every hiatus, every break that we had from the show, I came to Nashville and I'm songwriting. And so I've been doing it for, you know, 6 years now, and have some really wonderful, beautiful songs that I'm really proud of. And to, you know, done some performances around, and of course play the Opry here, and having people interested in what I'm saying as Chrissy and sharing my heart and my soul as me, not as a character, is really important and special to me. And there's nothing like music. I feel like live music, there's such a cyclical energy that is so special. And every time I leave a show, I'm inspired. And so I hope to do that when people come to see me.
And I was looking it up actually while we're talking to you. So you're coming to Jersey. So you're going to be here performing on the East Coast also.
Yeah. DC, Boston, New York. DC, Boston, New York. Oh my gosh, I'm blanking. Hold on.
See, that's why I was trying to look it up. Both of us. We got our phones out. Right now,
I even did a little rap about it, and I can't even remember. DC, Philly, New York, Boston, Chicago, Atlanta, Nashville.
All right, so you're coming to Philly too.
Yes.
You will be here with us in Philly, performing here. What do we get from a Chrissy Metz City Winery performance?
You are going to get a lot of emotions, folks. Really, the music that I'm going to be sharing is about love and loss, and new love, and also a cathartic sort of introspection after I wrote the book, realizing there were a lot of things that I thought I was healed from, but that were still hurting and that I had to write about. So, you know, it'll be sort of a storyteller experience, and of course, how I came to write the songs and why I'm so inspired to share them. And hopefully it'll bring some catharsis to the people there.
It's like you've done this before. So you're talking about the music and you kind of segued into, and that's why you wrote the book. So also best-selling author. But that's an interesting question, because we talked about you being so open in sharing your experiences. So many of them out there, and some they're not all positive. Some of them painful. Why take it a step further and write a book? Just put it all out there.
Well, you know, my agent, she approached me about it, and she's like, "Have you ever wanted to?" And I was like, "Of course I want to, but like, what do I have to say?" And she's like, "Chrissy, are you kidding?"
Yeah.
And I said, "If there's a way that I could hopefully find healing through A, writing it, and B, sharing my experiences and giving life lessons, then it makes sense." And so that's what we did. Like, I went with my ghostwriter, Kevin, he's incredible. We just talked and talked and talked. And I was like, "These are the things that I want to share." And like, one of the chapters is about my stepfather and how we had a very, you know, he was very abusive growing up. And now I can look back and forgive him. And not forgive him because we justify his actions, but I forgive. It's for me and my healing. And so hopefully people can, you know, it's like they say, like, when you hold a grudge or you don't forgive, it's like drinking poison and expecting the other person to get sick.
Yeah.
It's like, it's only hurting you. And so it's not easy, but it's, you know, it's worth it. So, and the only way to go is through something. And so that was really the impetus for me to write the book. And now looking back, I'm like, oh, there are some things that I haven't healed from. And that being the relationship with my father, who was estranged when he passed away. And so I wrote a song about our relationship called Daddy's Girl. And so, you know, it's just, I always try to write from where I'm feeling, what I'm feeling in the moment. So
I read some of those reviews as well. And there's, it was surprising to me, I don't know if it was surprising to you, how many people say that the book also spoke to them. And I was dealing with this kind of challenge, and I had similar, and it didn't make them feel better that you had as well, but it made them feel seen, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, because somebody else had, you know, somebody else on a higher level who they were familiar with had also gone through these things.
Yeah. When you read an article about anything or a book or, you know, talk to somebody and you're like, "Wait, you had that experience?" Mm-hmm. You feel so much less alone. And you also realize that, like, it doesn't matter what money you have in your bank account, what, you know, what numbers on the scale or in the bank account or whatever, like, we're all going through it and we all have a journey. And mine just happens to be more public because I'm in the public eye. But I can relate to anybody who's in the grocery store who, you know, we end up breaking down in the chip aisle because she's sharing her story with me. You know, I'm moved by those stories as well. And I hope and I think that there's a lot of healing in that. And all we want is to be heard. You know, we want to feel that we are important and we are heard. And which is so strange about me writing my book helps people to share their stories with me and then they feel heard. So it's really a beautiful thing.
I think it's also it's a credit to you because you're willing to allow them to be heard. Like, you, people say that you are responsive. You do interact with them. You are sharing your stories. And I think that makes people feel comfortable talking. Two more, and then I'm going to go because we're, you know, friends now and can just keep talking forever. And I don't want to monopolize all of your time. I know there are other people who, you know, probably want to talk to you too. Message, like, people who are hearing this, they're hearing your music, that show is over, but more shows are coming out. They're getting to know more of you. We started by defining you defining yourself. What do you hope people get out of you sharing so much about yourself?
I hope that they know that if they're here on this plane of existence, that they're purposeful. you know, like the miracle that has to happen in order for a human life to form and to make it and to be alive, you know, like it is really miraculous. And if you're here and there's something placed upon your heart, it's something you have to pursue. And even if you never accomplish anything, you're purposeful because you're here. And that nothing is personal. I think so many times I would take things personally and it would sort of monopolize my thoughts, but also cripple me into moving forward. So, so much about anything that happens is never about us. It's people and their projections. And so, I don't know. I hope that as you know, complicated as that answer might have been, that's the takeaway.
Final thing, we end every segment edition of The Pulse. We're all about use your voice for good. So I think kind of this whole interview has been about how you're using your voice for good. But is there a specific use your voice for good initiative that you're involved in? Is there a specific message that you want to share with people about using their voice for good?
You know, I think for me, and recently I finished a project where I had to really advocate for the actors because I was the lead in the movie. And there were things that they weren't comfortable with. And so I always think, like, if you see something, say something, even though it's really hard and you might rub somebody the wrong way or you might lose a job or whatever, like, I can't stand by and watch people in situations where they're being taken advantage of or there's injustice or racial injustice and any of those things where people aren't treated fairly, like that stuff makes me crazy. And so in any capacity, but for me, that was my recent experience. If you see something, you have to say something, and it might be scary and it might be uncertain, but everybody deserves to be treated well and fairly.
I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. I appreciate this discussion. This has been a pleasure. I thank you for carving out some time for us.
Of course. It was nice to talk to you.
And we'll be continuing to follow your career when you're in Philadelphia. You're coming to Philadelphia. You should come by in the studio with us.
Okay. I'll do the clapper for y'all.
Yep. See? We're kindred spirits. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You do the same. Take care. Thank you so much for listening to today's edition of The Pulse with Chrissy Metz, actor, singer, best-selling author, and has been the case fairly regularly. I really enjoyed the conversation because you find out so much more about people when you get to spend some time with them. I said it to her, and I wasn't stretching the truth when I said it just felt like you were sitting there talking to a friend as you were talking to her, as she shared experiences, positive and negative, and seemed really genuinely sincere about wanting her experiences to help other people. So I appreciate that. I hope you got as much out of it as I did. A reminder, if you're ever in Philadelphia and you want to watch the show, you can check it out on Fox 29, 6:30 in the evening on Mondays. Nationally, you can check us out on Fox Soul at 9 p.m. Of course, the shows are always available for download. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you can get notified every time a new show comes up, as they do every week. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Follow me on social media at BillAFox29. And remember, whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.